Good morning.
Morning, morning.
Just a schedule note. We'll have this morning and next week, Emet Hashem. Those will be our two final Sunday morning shiurim for the season. And then the next Sunday afterwards is Tisha B'Av. We'll take a break for a few weeks and resume Chodesh Elul, Be'ezras Hashem. Figured we had the last two shiurim exploring different ideas from the world of Rav Kook. We saw a little bit of into his sefer Ikveh Tzon. We did a piece in that together, and then last time we saw the unapologetic approach and conviction that Rav Kook had regarding different areas of hashkafa. I wanted to transition and explore the great debate that took place in the end of the 19th century into the beginning of the 20th century, the great Mussar debate. Now, when you think of the world of Mussar, the name Rav Kook usually doesn't come to mind. We don't picture him in the Mussar world. However, it's interesting, Rav Kook himself felt a very close connection to Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He never met him personally. Rabbi Yisrael passed away when Rav Kook was 18 years old. Rav Kook was then a Talmud in Volozhin, and he had such a strong hargasha about the loss of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter that he tore kriya as if he was his Rebbe Muvok. So I figured we'll start off with a beautiful essay that Rav Kook wrote in 1933. This is 2 years before he passed away. An essay that he wrote on the 50th yard site of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, giving us a little bit of an insight and a description of the greatness of his personality and his contribution. And then I want to see the words of Rabbi Yisrael himself and the description and the expansion of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter's philosophy by his great Talmud, Rabbi Itzela. Yossi, you need a marmakomos? No, so we could have people could share. Could share. We're talking about Musser, so we have to be able to share a little bit.
We don't need many lights.
Rabbi Itzela, we know, is one of the three main disciples of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, and he has an entire sefer where he describes the methodology and the innovation of Rabbi Yisrael's understanding of Musar and what he felt was necessary for the masses and for the Talmidei Chachamim of his time and obviously and beyond. So we'll start off with this hesped that Rav Kook gave in 1933, 50 years after the passing of Rabbi Yisrael. We'll see a little bit of Rabbi Yisrael's philosophy through the lens of Rabbi Itzela. And then we'll leave off with a few questions, I think, for this week. And then next week, we'll get involved with some of the fierce opposition, right? Surprisingly fierce opposition. You would think, what's bad potentially about learning Musar and developing one's midos and refining your character? It sounds like a wonderful thing. What could possibly be wrong with the Limud HaMusar? We'll see a little indication or some maybe strange things that we might not be familiar with as going through, when going through Reb Itzela's understanding of Reb Yisrael's approach. And then next week we'll see from Reb Chaim Brisker, the way that he expressed his concern over the Musar movement. And then we'll go back to Reb Kook. Reb Kook actually in an earlier essay that he wrote in 1905, where he expressed also hesitation on at least how Reb Yisrael's vision was being implemented. Okay. So writes Rav Kook here on page one, it's impossible to give any kind of toar, any kind of picture to a man of his stature. And for sure, somebody like myself, I never met him before in person. However, I've heard so many incredible things about Rav Yisrael from valid, reliable sources. Asher zeh yuvol shanim nimla me'oz nignaz aron hakodesh. It's been a yovel, rather, from the time that the aron hakodesh has been hidden, meaning since the passing of Rabbi Yisrael, and it's a voda kasha to write anything that could describe his godless, his kedusha, his splendor. Nonetheless, I feel that I can't exempt myself from trying to express some of my feelings. For one reason, which is that it's important for us to know and for generations to come to view Rabbi Yisrael as a banner, as somebody to strive towards both he, his personality, and his vision of Musar. I'll share with you, interesting, in a letter that Rav Kook has, when he speaks about the learning of Musar, but also Panimius HaTorah, and we'll delve more into what the difference is between Musar in contrast to Panimius HaTorah. Rav Kook says about himself, and as we've seen in previous letters, he was very open about his feelings, Anochi Keshani La'atzmi. I'll tell you that personally, Baruch Hashem Rachok Milios Nena Harbe Kishim Mishabchin Osi. I don't get a lot of pleasure when people praise me or speak highly of me. V'lo Lios Mitztayr Makbid Harbe Kishim Mevazin Osi. Nor am I totally destroyed or distraught when people put me down. Shavach Lishmo Yisbarach. I thank Hashem for this. She'esek ha-tamidi b'limud ha-musr u'panimius Torah ha-kadosha pol alai zos ha-techuna. He says, it's not because naturally I'm such an anav, not because naturally the praise of others doesn't make me feel good or the rejection of others doesn't cause me to feel somewhat down, but it's through my esek tamidi b'limud ha-musr v'panimius ha-Torah, through my constant, diligent work in Musar and Panimius, I was able to develop this tichuna, this personality, where these types of external things don't faze me as much. So Rav Kook himself was clearly not only in Hashkafa promoting Musar, but he's telling us that he himself learned Musar consistently. So he continues here in his Hesped for Rabbi Yisrael. The greatest desire of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was to stay b'hatznei aleches. B'chol kocho musari ha'elyon omel shelo lihisvada l'rabim, and he tried with every fiber of his being not to be known to the masses. Lo ha'is ha'shum efsharo sh'or nera v'nifle kizeh, however, it was impossible to keep this brilliant and radiant light from expanding and exploding outwards. V'chol Yisrael b'yichud gedolei hador v'anshei esgula, to the point where the entirety of Klal Yisrael, and especially the gedolei hador, became aware of this Isha Elokim kodosh gon hador u'polo chai b'socham. Rabbi Yisrael, we're going to learn about momentarily, was very influenced by Rabbi Zundel Misalant. Rav Zundel Misalant was one of the main Talmidim of Rav Chaim Volozhin, and we know that Rav Chaim was one of the main disciples of the Gra. So Rav Zundel was in that direct dynasty, that legacy of the Vilna Gaon. And Rav Zundel, for the majority of his life, he was a Nister. He lived in Salant, hence the last name, but he made it his avoda that no one should pick up on the brilliance, on his godless, on his mastery of Torah. And he really hid that well. We'll see, though, there were a few people living in Salant that were able to, like, peek behind the curtain, and Rabbi Yisrael was one of them. Rabbi Yisrael discovered his godless, and he wanted to emulate his great Rebbe by also remaining a Nister. However, like Rav Kook is alluding to, that was not the calling of Rabbi Yisrael. He couldn't contain that light, and he had to share it with the world. Gaonis Elyona explains Rav Kook that when it comes to great brilliance, it comes in two flavors. You have the Kishron HaSichli, brilliance of the intellect, and then you also have the Kishron HaRitzoni, which literally means the brilliance of the will, of the drive, of the world of emotion. And you'll have different gedolim throughout the centuries who really thrive or excel in one of those areas. With Reb Yisrael Salanter, one of the incredible unique qualities of the personality was Or Olam Zeh Zocha L'Shnei HaKsarim Be'orech Pela. Reb Yisrael was Zocha to have the crowns of both the Kishron HaSichli and the Kishron HaRitzoni. He was a Goin Adir in all areas of Shas and Poskim, with his Harifus and his Bekiyus, his sharpness and his vast knowledge, coming to a place of such a quality in Torah that he was revered amongst other Gedolim of the time. U'b'chol zos, but nonetheless, he was extremely in touch with his koach haratzon, the emotion that poured out of the neshama of Rabbi Yisrael was something that people would stand in awe of, and almost it was infectious. Now, for some reason, and Rav Kook says we don't know why, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter himself did not write much. The writings we have of Rabbi Yisrael are pretty much contained in the Sefer Or Yisrael, and those are 30 letters that were compiled by Rabbi Itzelov Petterberger, right, one of his three disciples. Rabbi Yisrael said about himself, he said, the truth is, if I had time to devote to writing, I could write tshuvas like the Noda B'Yehuda, no problem. But I have to focus all of my energies on what I feel is my purpose in life, which is the spreading of Musar. The last line here on page one, Reb Kook says, V'chol yitzirus and niflos halalu hayu mischadshos b'mehirus pilois b'chol eis hadorush. Not only was he incredible in his intellect, but the speed of thought of Reb Yisrael was something that was like in a different world, Kemara HaBetzik, mamish like a lightning bolt. And this is the famous story. Now, there's so many stories about every Gadol, and naturally we have to be skeptical of everything because we're Jewish, and that's okay. However, stories that come from a direct testimony of other Gadoli Yisrael, those are stories that obviously carry a lot of weight. This is one of them. Naftali Amsterdam, he was one of the other disciples of Rabbi Yisrael. He was the one who shared with the world the famous story. Rabbi Yisrael was going to a place to give a shiur, and like he always did, he would post the Mar Makomos a week or two before, so the scholars of the town would have a time to go through them and study to be prepared for the shiur. And there were two people who were very anti the Musar movement, and they wanted to play games with Rabbi Yisrael. So they took the Mar Makomos down. There were like 50, 60, 70 Mar Makomos. And instead, they wrote random sources all throughout Shas and Poskim. Mamish random. Gemaras and Chulin and the Rambam in the middle of nowhere and the Marik. And they posted that instead. So when Rabbi Yisrael got up to the podium to give the drasha and the Mar Makomos were placed before him, he recognized right away, these are not the Mar Makomos I sent in. Instead, they're random sources. So he paused for 3 minutes, just standing there. And then he went into an elaborate drasha, utilizing every one of those sources. Stayed in the Gemara and Chulin, Daf Yud Zayin, Amud Beis, and he tied it into the Rambam somehow in the Goyim. It was a brilliant sight to behold. And Rabbi Tully Amsterdam says, I was standing there witnessing this like spark of genius. Now, the reason why Rabbi Yisrael did this was because in order to promote any movement in Klal Yisrael, for you or I to get up there and, you know, I think we should learn more Musar. Okay, Shkoyach, right? However, if you're a Gadol and you can share your greatness in Torah with others who are also Gadolim to the point where they have a respect and a reverence for you, then you have more of a forum to be able to share what you feel is the right thing for Klal Yisrael. There's still going to be pushback, which is always healthy, right? Innovation is something that should be looked at very carefully, but at least you have the potential to make real changes when you're someone of that stature. He knew immediately they're playing games with me, they're trying to be mevaza me, to be mevaza my movement. And he took advantage of the opportunity. Now, the part that's not so well known about this story is that Rabbi Tully Amsterdam said why did it take him 3 minutes? Right? Why did it take him 3 minutes? Not because he needed that time to recall all of the sources. He could have looked at the paper and just put something together.
So that they would know that he had to reformulate.
So Reb Natali said, I don't know for sure, but my hunch is that he was working through an inner turmoil as to whether or not it was appropriate to display this level of brilliance. He says, that's my understanding of my Rebbe. And he came to the conclusion that on behalf of Klal Yisrael to be able to spread the importance of Mussar, I think it's okay. So Rav Kook is alluding to this idea when he says it was mamish, not only genius, but it was genius like a bolt of lightning with incredible speed. On the top of page 2, he says, all of this wealth of Ruchnius, right, these two crowns of the Kishron HaSichli and the Kishron Ritzoni, Rabbi Yisrael, channeled towards uplifting the Jewish people. Lavodas Hashem Yisborach L'Shem Shemayim. Im HaShe'ifa Lahatzdik Chevrosi. He says one of his main goals, as we find through many of the stories of Rabbi Yisrael and much of his writing that we have, is that he wanted to have more of a focus on the Bein Adam L'Chavero. And he would speak about this often. He would give Hadracha and Tochacha. And it would pain him greatly when he would see a lack of sensitivity between human beings. And it would pain him even more greatly, says Rav Kook, when he would see a corruption of Torah in the sense where people were machshiv and they were giving importance and time and effort to Bein Adam L'Makom, to the relationship between man and God. But when it comes to Bein Adam L'Chavero, that wasn't viewed as a religious pursuit. Now, that's more, it's humanism, that's not Yiddishkeit. He said that would cause Yisrael, Rabbi Yisrael, the greatest amount of pain. Harayon Shehikiv Eschayiv, but this was the theme that encompassed his whole life, was to find the cure. It's a beautiful mashal. Rav Kook is not making up this language. In the letters of Rabbi Yisrael, we find the way that he refers to learning Mussar is a refuah. It's the healing process that every human being needs to tap into. So just like you have, I remember speaking to a friend of mine, you know, the Goldman family from Chafetz Chaim, right? So Dr. Goldman, who passed away recently, so his father was an incredible physician, and he was very involved with research. And I forget exactly what he was instrumental in helping discover, but I heard from his grandchildren that for the last part of his life, the last 20 years or so, he was focused on finding a cure for Parkinson's. And, you know, unfortunately, he never did. But just that she'ifa, that ambition of actually trying to find a cure, you know, spending your whole life, that's like the ultimate l'shem shemayim. I remember myself personally when we were very involved with the medical world when Avram was born with neutropenia, and we were talking with all the specialists in the field and going to different conferences. I was so amazed by at least the doctors who were involved in the research. It's true the Gemara says, Tov Shibirofim Legehenim. There's definitely a concern of real arrogance when it comes to the world of medicine. But the doctors who were involved with the research, I've never seen personally in a secular, quote-unquote, pursuit, that level of l'shem shemayim that I saw by these individuals. I went to a conference one time with my wife where they had all six people throughout the country who were mamers the top in this field, which is a very rare disease, come together in Arizona. And all families, pretty much, who had children with neutropenia came as well. And I was assuming, based on my my culture, being in yeshiva, when you have a Adam Gadol, everyone, you know, hacks him and surrounds him and it's hard to get a word in with him. I was assuming that all these great doctors, they're going to be surrounded by the families. I'll probably have a chance to ask one or two questions. And I get to this conference and I see all the families are sitting there, you know, during breakfast. And the doctors are there in their own table, you know, drinking their coffee, eating their bagels. And I was astounded. I realized, though, once you leave the Jewish world, people don't have that same obnoxious behavior of like going over to the expert in the field and asking them every question you ever had. So I had to be very careful. Take advantage, but don't be obnoxious. So the description of Reb Yisrael was he had that same passion, lahavdil, for the finding the cure, the healing of the ruchniyistik machla for Klal Yisrael, letachulei nefesh, lahamon ha-poshut lufi erko, for all of the masses according to their ability, and la'anshei maila gedolei Torah, and even the anshei maila, the gedolei Torah, they're also in need of a refuah. Hu hisbonin kama mukahi machle shel hesach hadas mehabikoras atzmitz. Very beautiful way that Rav Kook explains the recognition of Rabbi Yisrael. He said he saw that there was a hesach hadas, there was a distraction, there was a lack of focus when it came to really reflecting and looking into oneself. Masha nashim heinam trudim. He saw people were constantly distracted. And this is even before technology as we know it. What were they distracted by? Either just the daily grind of life, or even the distraction of the sikhli, of the intellect, exploring chachmor, even exploring Torah. This line should be underlined, as it is. They didn't take the time to find themselves within the storm of life. Is that beautiful? V'sakona tzafuya la'amadas ha-Torah v'yadus, and he realized that this lack of focus presented a real danger to the entirety of Torah and true Yiddishkeit. Now it's true. We definitely had people well before Rabbi Yisrael Salanter speak about Musar and write classic Musar Svarim. What was the first Musar Sefer ever to be composed? Oh, okay. That's a good answer. Right? Koheles or Mishle? Okay. How about post-Tanakh? I remember hearing from Reb Reuven Feinstein. Okay, good. I'm looking for something a little bit later on in history, but I want to tell you what Reuven said. We were talking to him at a kiddush one time, talking about Musar, and he said, you know what the best Musar sefer is in the world? The classic Reuven. So I said, what? He said, Sefer Devarim. But the first Musar sefer as we know it was, even before Shari Tshuva, Chovos HaLevavos, right? That was the first Rabbeinu Bechaya. He wrote the Chovos Levavos in the 11th century. That's the first official classic Musar Sefer. So this has been a genre well before Rabbi Yisrael's time. Rabbi Yisrael was born in 1810, passed away in 1883. So hundreds of years before Rabbi Yisrael. However, not only do we have the medieval Musar Svarim and the classic text Mesillas Yesharim, which we'll learn in a moment, was the sefer given to him by none other than Reb Zundel Misalant. Reb Zundel told Reb Yisrael, all Sifrei Musar are incredible, but this should be your guiding light, Mesillas Yesharim. However, with all of the history and all of the rich literature we had in the realm of Musar, B'chol zos matzahu zal berucha hagadol sheyesh od ma'ad lehosif, Rabbi Yisrael found within his great spirit there is more to add. Shelechachmas ha-musar v'hayira hadrusha ma'od lefi matziv shel hador. And this is also a very important idea. When it comes to musar and yira and hashkafa, panimiyas ha-Torah, whatever it exactly is you call it, it has to be lefi ha-matziv shel hador. It has to fit with the generation. You have to know how to speak to people who are living now. So shum kovabo mismaros umasar nafsho Allah, and therefore he gave his life for the enhancement of Limud HaMusar, which he felt was the ultimate cure for the Jewish people.
Could the Rav expand exactly what's the illness? I mean, it seems a little, at least according to Rav Kook, what, like you're talking about a door illness. What is the illness? What does that mean?
So what is the illness is a good question. And what makes it more complex, like we'll see next week, not everyone agreed that they suffered from that illness, right? So it was a machla that he spent his whole life trying to find the cure for, when you had other gedolim saying, I don't think it's really a problem, right? The way that Rav Kook is describing it in very broad terms is a hesach hadas, which means living with a sense of ongoing distraction from the important things in life. Coming closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, refining one's midos, bein adam lemakom, in the areas that are not as tangible, like emunah and bitachon, and bein adam lechavero, something that was not really understood to be part of Yiddishkeit. So within that realm, Rabbi Yisrael felt that there was just a lack of clarity. Right? The famous story that's also documented from many sources is the Makkah B'Patish, the thing that really encouraged him to start this mission, was the era of Yom Kippur Maisa, where he was trying to figure out what time it was, and he found an elderly Jew walking to shul who was very immersed in his tshuva process, getting ready for the Yom HaDin HaGadol, and he asked him, excuse me, what time is it? And he didn't respond. And he asked him again. He thought maybe he didn't hear him, but it was clear after asking a second time that the fellow heard Rabbi Yisrael, but he didn't feel it was important enough to like interrupt his tshuva process to answer his fellow Jew. And in that moment, Rabbi Yisrael said, we're definitely missing the boat. So we'll call it a hesach hadas. That was the machla. It was just the lack of focus, a lack of understanding, or we'll see more. It was a lack of an emotional clarity of machal vaso b'olam, of what are we doing here? What are we actually here in our short time in Olam Hazeh? What are we trying to accomplish? Okay, so that was parts of the hesped that Rav Kook gave. Let's jump briefly into some of the actual writings of Rabbi Yitzchak Blazer, explaining the innovation of Rabbi Yisrael. We're on page 4. Let's start from the third line here. The way that Rabbi Itzala always refers to his Rebbe is in the most glowing terms. Admor hagon hagodol hachosid hamiti kodosh Yisrael zecher tzadik kodosh levrocha schuso yogin aleinu meir silant v'chein bimei elumo yotzak mayim al yad ish kodosh v'norah. When Rabbi Yisrael was a young man, he poured water onto the hands of an Ish Kadosh Venora. That expression of pouring water over the hands we find from Navi, that Elisha poured water over the hands of Eliyahu, and that, the Gemara says, is a way of showing that he was Meshamesh, right? He was serving Eliyahu. Rabbi Yisrael served Rabbi Yosef Mizalant. Hagon Hagadol Lachosid va'onav or Olam Kadosh Hashem Mechubed Marona Yosef Zundel Misalant Hamefursam Befi Kol Bishmo Reb Zundel Misalant Talmid Choviv. So who was Reb Zundel? He was a beloved Talmid of Reb Chaim Mivilozhin, who, as we know, Reb Chaim was a Talmid of the Gra. Shimesh as Rabbo Bekodesh, and he served his Rebbe in Kedusha. And he received from his Rebbe the ways of Musar and Yira and the Avodas Hashem. So what he's doing here in this first paragraph is he's giving a legitimacy to the approach of Rabbi Yisrael. He's saying it wasn't just a chiddush he came up from within his own neshama, but it was his shimush, it was his experience and exposure with Rav Zundel Misalant, who was a Talmud of Rav Chaim, who was just passing along the Mesorah from the Gra. So this goes back to the holiest and the most authentic sources. Now, the way of Rav Zundel is that he would learn Musar, I'm in the second paragraph here, b'chol yom b'hisbonenus rav. It wasn't just learning, but it was hisbonanus, real deep contemplation. And then he would review psukim of Yiren Ava, or different Maimari Chazal that he felt really touched him. He would cherry pick those psukim or those words of Chazal, and he would say them over and over again, and he would go out from the city into the field to review those words of Chazal. And on Shabbos, during the long nights in the winter, he was machmer not to learn by any kind of light, and instead he would review those Maimari Chazal in his head, focusing on different concepts of Bitachon and Emuna and Avas Hashem and Avas Abrios. Rabbi Yisrael, as a young man, Betal Yalduso, this is the beginning of the third paragraph, he observed the conduct of Rabbi Zundel carefully. And he saw that there were times that Rabbi Zundel would leave the Beis Medrash and walk outside into the fields, and he was curious, what was he doing outside? So he followed him b'acheva in a hidden way, and he saw that Rabbi Zundel would get outside, away from everyone else, and he would say over these different Maimari Chazal or Psukim in a manner that was like hislavus, like a fire. And he observed this carefully, but one time, Rabbi Zundel noticed that he was being followed by Rabbi Yisrael, so he turned around. And the line that he said, writes Rabbi Itzela, is a line that I heard directly from my Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael. And Rabbi Yisrael told me that when he heard this line from Rabbi Zundel Misalant, it changed his life forever. What was that line? Rabbi Zundel, noticing that Rabbi Yisrael was there watching him and listening to him, he said, Yisrael, let's find the line here. Where are we, everybody? The third paragraph. Yisrael, the last word in the line, a little bit past the halfway point. Lamod Musar Utehe Yare Shemayim. Simple instructions. You don't have to keep on looking at me and admiring me. You learn Musar and you'll have real, healthy, transformative Yirah Shemayim. You'll become a Yare Shemayim. Those words were Yardu L'so Chadre Levovo Kecheitz Mikeshes. Those enter the heart of Rabbi Yisrael Mamish like an arrow. And it was at that point on that he devoted his life to the learning and eventually the spreading of Musar. We'll turn the page here to page 5. What was the innovation of Rabbi Yisrael? So he explains that there were really two parts to the movement. One was the Etzim Chovas Limud HaYira V'HaMusar, trying to bring back, you know, somewhat of a lost art. The idea of learning Musar consistently and daily, that it should be a focus in your life. And then base, the second part of the innovation, this is probably the main chiddush of Rabbi Yisrael, was the ofen, the way how to learn Musar, where it actually has a hispilus, it creates an inner movement and transformation. So he focuses here on the second part. What does it mean to learn Musar in a particular way that it will change you? So he says, Admar Zal b'chachmaso shina es penei limud ha-musar. He changed the way that people learn Musar. V'yalbash osa tzura acheres. He gave it a different form. Gam mishalom lepo amimeza sifrei Musar. What did people used to do? You open up a Chovas Levavos, a Sharei Tshuva, or a Chosadikim, Mesilas Yesharim. People would learn Musar. Hayasignun ha-limud hazeh b'tamu b'nigun. Limud Gemara Poskim, but they would learn it in the same way with the same melody as you would learn a Gemara or Halacha. O Be'iyun Bahabat Levad, or even just by analyzing it and thinking without actually verbalizing any of the words. However, Rabbi Yisrael, Hora Bina Vedas, he taught us a different derech, where he explained that in order to really have the toelis of the limud hamusar, the benefit, you have to have two components. One is the idea of a haskalah, b'chachmas hayira, a real deep understanding and wisdom within the realm of Musar. And the second thing was hisorus. There has to be an awakening. There has to be this inner transformation that the limud ha-musar is not just an intellectual pursuit, but it's yecham levavo yispal nafsho, that it warms up the heart and it moves the spirit. V'yisorer bekirbo yires Hashem, and it brings within the inner being a real presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So you have to have both the intellectual pursuit of Musar, understanding it well, but also there has to be the emotional connection to those ideas. So how did he accomplish that? If you look at the last paragraph, Lazos l'tachlis k'niyas ayira, in order to acquire Musar, nochut shetiya signon halimud b'sifrei Musar b'hispalus hanefesh. The way we learn those Musar works has to be different than the way we learn Gemara and Halacha. Belev nachon. Now this is actually quoting from Rabbi Yisrael. Belev nachon bikol otsev bisfasayim dolkim. Lev nachon means a strong heart. Bikol otsev is, what's otsev? Otsev usually has the connotation of sadness. Okay, so we'll have to explore more what that means. But with the voice of, we'll call it atzvus, and leave it vague for now, with your lips aflame, leharchiv es harayun b'tzirei chushi, but not just to be singing the words, but to use it as this meditation of having the images of what I'm talking about and what I'm trying to accomplish for myself. It should be this vivid image happening in my head, ki koach atzir moel mo'od lemusar, because having that real power of vision helps significantly when it comes to implementing musar. La'orer hanefesh berigshas eivorim, to awaken the soul through the feeling and the movement of the body. Limshoch bekirba devarim hanoedei me'anshei gevia v'hanefesh. And this is going to be one of those points that need understanding. Rabbi Yisrael, when he speaks about the learning of Musar and when he speaks about the methodology of how to learn Musar with this hisorus, with this hislavus, he seems to focus on yira. And not just like a high level of yiras haromamus, but he focuses on yiras haonesh, which is much more of a basic motivation of, I want to do the right thing because I understand that there are consequences to action. Now, this is something that's very hard for most people to feel comfortable with and to use as a compelling motivation in our Avodas Hashem. And likely for most, if this was the main focus of our Avoda, that would lead to very unhealthy living and the Avodas Hashem. And we'll see, this is going to be one of the main points that those who expressed concern or opposition to the Musar movement, they pointed to this issue of why the intensity of thinking about Yiras HaOnesh. But I'm pointing out that this is definitely one of his themes. So there definitely is a difference between the different schools of Musar and how they branched out from after this initial breakthrough of Rabbi Yisrael. But within the actual writing of Rabbi Yisrael, this is definitely something that he talks about in many places. So that requires understanding. Okay.
It seems also that it's a disconnect from his whole experience with that elderly gentleman crossing the bridge. Right? That there's more of like a basic fundamental need as opposed to this very typical,
you're saying that in the story of him following and observing Rabbi Zundel Misalant, we don't get the impression.
Oh,
it's a very basic thing.
Yeah, it's like he's so absorbed in year. It just seems like it's whatever.
Meaning, why would he focus on Yiras HaOnesh if one of the main reasons he felt it was necessary to begin the Musar revolution is because people were just being Masiach Das. They were totally spaced out to what's important in life, like answering someone's simple question. How does this approach address that problem? Okay, these are all good questions.
Is Yiras HaOnesh coming from Rav Itzchok, or his interpretation of his Rebbe, or is it all the students?
That's a good question. Is this the interpretation of Rav Itzchok, or is this really what Rav Yisrael spoke about? The answer is this is exactly what Rav Yisrael spoke about. And we're going to see in next week's shir that when Rav Yisrael passed away and when Rav Itzchok took over giving the drasha, he had a very different focus. And his focus was much more Avas Hashem. So, and that's a question that we'll explore next week. We could relate more to that maybe. It feels better and it's harder to tap into Yiras HaOnesh, but what was the thought process of Rav Itzchok? Why would he deviate from his Rebbe? And did his Rebbe not get it? Right? Did Rebbe Yisrael Salanter, the Godol Hador, the father of Musar, revered by all Gedolei Yisrael in his time and beyond, why was he focused so much? Almost, you could use the word, although it's probably not appropriate, why was he obsessed with this flavor of Musar? So we'll get there, Yirtzeh Hashem. I just want to end off, though, as the hour is late. When Rav Itzchok explains the methodology of the Musar, he does point out that not everyone embraced the Limud HaMusar, and not everyone agreed with Rav Yisrael that it was really necessary. And there are two reasons for that. He actually has more, but these are two reasons that we have at least for today. He says one reason is Rabbi Yisrael was working on a cure to Choli HaNefesh. Now, Choli HaNefesh is not a term that Rabbi Yisrael invented. That goes back to the language of the Rishonim, right? The Rambam speaks about Choli HaNefesh. So he's working on this cure. What's going to drive me to try to bring this Musar concept into my life and be open-minded to somewhat of a new approach in how to learn Musar that I never really saw my father or grandfather do? It's only if I have a sense of urgency. I have to find a cure. But, says Rav Itzchok, if a person's not convinced that there's anything that requires healing, so then why would I take my time and effort in pursuing this refuah? I'm not in need of a refuah. And that's going to be, we'll see next week what the response was from Volozhin. When Reb Chaim Brisker said to Reb Itzchok, we're not sick over here, we're good. We don't need the Musar movement. So one issue is, if we don't realize that we're struggling with the machla, we have no desire to hear innovative forms of refuah. The second factor is addressing this very issue of the focus. He says, Zos Shenis, Etzim ha-sugula shalimun ha-musar, im ki kolelis cheshbonos rabim. Listen, learning Musar, although there are many different things that we focus on, ulam yadua ki yesod bahu cheshbon ha-nefesh mi yiras ha-onesh lachshav cheshbono shalolam. But we know, at least in the Musar of Rabbi Yisrael, that this idea of yiras ha-onesh, this very fundamental, seemingly lowly level of motivation, right? Reminding ourselves that there are consequences to actions and therefore I want to make sure to do the right thing. That's not very enjoyable to think about. He says, Bahashkofa Rishona, right? It would seem at first glance that this type of process, this type of focus, would just bring you to sadness and hopelessness and depression. What every human being wants more than anything is to feel a simcha sachayim. We want to feel a sense of strength and vigor and joy. And therefore, when we hear concepts encouraging us to learn Musar behispailus and to focus on some of these more depressing aspects of life and mortality, that's something we shy away from naturally and understandably. Now, he says the truth is, if it's done the right way, it could bring incredible joy. But you have to have the patience to get there. If someone is what?
People were not holding it, but if they were, it would be a helpful.
Right. If one knew how to do it with the proper hadracha, the guidance. So he says it's true, it starts off mar, it starts off bitter, but as one continues, it becomes musuk, it becomes sweet, just like exercise, right? It starts off bitter, it's torturous, but theoretically, if you keep on doing it, it becomes something you look forward to, and you actually need it. I can't go a day without jogging. So Rav Itzel is saying we find the same thing in the realm of Musar. Okay, but we're gonna leave off with some of these questions. Namely, on one hand, we have the incredible picture that was painted for us by Rav Kook 50 years after the passing of Rabbi Yisrael. We have Rabbi Itzula's thesis explaining and expanding upon Rabbi Yisrael's main innovation. Right, there is an A and a B. The A is the necessity of learning Musar, and B, which was the main chiddush of Rabbi Yisrael, how to learn Musar, which seems like a real new approach that was not done previously. At least it was never done in a systematic way. And then we'll leave off with the question of why the focus on Yira, why not focusing on Bein Anam L'Chavero and Avas HaBrios and Avas Hashem? Why did Rav Itzula seem to change from the Mesorah of his Rebbe? And then we'll analyze what was some of the concern that Rav Kook himself voiced and that we find from the yeshiva in Volozhin and others. To be continued. Shkoyach.